Redbeard here in the studio with the Genesis Archive, opening the musical box, finding that supper's ready, watching the cinema show, playing with the carpet crawlers, and letting livestock loose on the Great White Way.
And the land lies down.
Some fans, old songs to them are songs from Abacab, you know. And in fact, we have a much longer history. I mean, but really, you've got the Stones and the Who and us. And in fact, you know, we have had those kind of songs throughout the history of the band. I mean, I Know What I Like was one of the early hits we had in England. But I mean, all the way through the history of the band, there have been short songs, you know, and there have been long songs. So it depends who you talk to.
The carpet crawlers, he dare call us.
Also, I mean, I've only been playing lead guitar since Steve left.
It's about 10, 14 years. You know.
78. What's that?
13 years. Right. Quite a long time.
So give me another 10 years and watch out.
Rise down.
This is Phil Collins.
And this is Tony Banks.
Hi, this is Mike Rutherford from Genesis in the studio with Archive Part 1.
A truly remarkable story of boyhood schoolmates, musical dreams, collective struggle, and creative excellence is being celebrated with the BBC Showtime documentary Genesis, Some of Its Parts, plus a novel three-disc anthology called Archive, sporting not only the best of Genesis over more than four decades, but also some hand-picked solo highlights from the band's extended family of solo projects. Over the course of its first five studio albums, fronted by the charismatic frontman singer Peter Gabriel, and with a core of founders Tony Banks, Mike Rutherford, Anthony Phillips, Genesis grew steadily from arguably the world's biggest cult band to an international superstar stadium filler with upwards of 130 million albums sold. In the same local London art school music scene in 1969, which gave the world progressive rock pioneers King Crimson, yes, and the Cambridge contingent of Pink Floyd, Genesis quickly gained a reputation for lengthy, dramatic arrangements on their early albums Trespass in 1970, Nursery Crime the following year, and the critical breakthrough Foxtrot in October 1972. Phil Collins acknowledges that Genesis was originally lumped into the group of English progressive rock bands, which included Pink Floyd, King Crimson, and Yes, but Phil Collins maintains that the comparisons with Genesis end there.
But the band, like Yes, they had a certain direction that they took. We never had a direction. We wrote songs, you know, and some of these songs were 10 minutes, some were 15, some were 20, some were 3. And if they sounded better, If an idea was right at three or 4 minutes long, you don't want to sort of milk it for everything it's worth. If an idea fitted in a 3 or 4 minute format, if you like, not that we thought of formats as such, but if it sounded better as a 3 or 4 minute song, then we would leave it like that. Other things like Supper's Ready, that you have ideas that don't necessarily have punchlines, and they drift into other moods, and then you have your 10 minute songs, 12 minute songs, whatever. We've always done a bit of everything, you know. It's like me, I write lots of different types of songs. And for a Nursery Crime album, when you have some song like Harlequin, which is really a straight song, straight ahead song, verse, chorus. But because it was surrounded by things like Hogweed and Musical Box, it didn't sound like a straight song. And we were trying to write singles for years, you know. We were putting Carpet Crawlers out, I Know What I Like, The Lamb Lies Down, which songs that we thought were singles, but nobody ever played them because A, we were unknown, and B, we were branded as an album group. But nowadays, our 3 or 4 minute songwriting ability has got better. So, of course, things will change. And maybe we've not been what that person thought we were in the first place. You know, Maybe we were never a progressive rock group. Maybe we were always just a group of songwriters saying, how about this for an idea? We've got this idea for a song about a hermaphrodite. Let's do that. Or how about writing a song about this little girl that, you know, playing croquet and knocks her family's heads off on the croquet lawn? You know, I mean, it could have been like that, you know. But we didn't wake up and sort of this massive image and sort of this thing we wanted to say. We were just writing songs, you know.
Founding Genesis guitarist Mike Rutherford. You know, Genesis formed in the dying embers of the Beatles bonfire, but you really, really coalesced in a post-Beatles London music scene. What were you collectively going for? Was it conscious or just schoolboy evolution?
What's interesting, actually, I do remember is that, you know, when you're that age, there's no long-term plan. You know, 2 years is a lifetime. You can't think beyond 2 years. So we didn't really have a plan as to what we're going to do beyond try and be a little bit different. You know, I mean, you talk to all the band, the original band, and we'll quote, influence-wise, we'll quote, you know, the Beatles, the Kinks, the Who, a lot of Tamla Motown. But you hear the early songs, and you can't really hear that. It's just a sort of, we started writing together and got a sort of certain sound, slightly folky, which then went to sort of quite big dramatic movements. And just sort of, we just felt our way through that.
Can you tell me where? Can you tell me where my country lies? Said the uniform to his true love's eyes. It lies with me, cried the Queen of Maybe. For her merchandise, he traded in his prize. Paper late, cried a voice in the crowd. Old man dies, the note he left was signed Old Father Thames. It seems he's drowned, selling pound. Citizens of hope and glory, time goes by. It's the time of your life. Easy now, sit you down, chewing through your wimpy dreams. They eat without a sound. Young man says you are what you eat well. Old man says you are what you wear well, well. You know what you are, you don't give a damn. Bursting your belt, that is your homemade chef. The captain leaves. We'll be right back.
Up next, Phil Collins and Mike Rutherford discuss the first five Genesis studio albums with Peter Gabriel as their avant-garde frontman vocalist. Follow In the Studio on Facebook. Get much more inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Phil Collins and Mike Rutherford of Genesis for Archive Part 1.
This is Phil Collins.
And this is Tony Banks.
Hi, this is Mike Rutherford from Genesis, in the studio with Archive Part 1.
Thank you, guys. I'm Redbeard, continuing our conversation regarding Genesis from 1970 to 1975 with founding guitarist Mike Rutherford in the studio. John Anderson told me that in 1969, the consensus was that King Crimson was the best new band that was taking rock and roll forward, that the ball was at their feet. What do you recall about that period prior to Trespass?
I do remember that album being actually something that really did impress us, and we felt that where they were going was the way we wanted to sort of go. Obviously, we didn't do quite the same thing, but the area they'd marked out as the territory they're going to work in, I felt was where we were in the same place as well, actually. Then after that, they became something else. But the first album was actually pretty special, I think.
Did you know then that until The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway in 74, that it was difficult to find Genesis albums here in the U.S. record stores, and that there could be months between the U.K. and the American releases?
I didn't. I know we were on sort of, who were we on? We were on for a while. Yes, I didn't actually know. I mean, in fact, you weren't, until we came here, really, we weren't sort of quite aware how it worked, in a sense. And I knew it was a delay, but I didn't know it was that much of a delay. No, but I was aware when we first started touring around the States, you know, outside the big cities, you really did feel that your cult following, who very much adored you, you were from Mars, you know what I mean? The kind of, yes, the way we dressed, the way we looked, you were just something
right
that was so foreign to what was going on in that part of the world.
That's true.
Like your Fort Waynes and your,
boy, that's
and
true,
your Denvers and your southern states. But actually, in a way, looking back, it made it quite special, I think.
How did you compose back then? For instance, on The Musical Box or Cinema Show from Sullying the Bunny?
Quite simply. I mean, The Cinema Show was the first half of the bit that Tony and I had. We wrote together. And the second part, and Tony's lyrics, and the second part was basically very much, you know, the start of our sort of three-piece, you know, Phil, drums, me, and Tony Banks, with the start of our sort of exciting three-piece soloing sound. And The Musical Box was actually, the first part was the sort of guitar chords I had and stuff, and Pete put the melody and words, and the second half, you know, Tony's chords came in. So there was, in those days, there was slightly more bits you already had, in a sense, whereas I think later on in life, it became a three-piece. We did more jamming from sort of day one.
Dabs her skin with pretty smells, concealing to appeal. I will make my bed, she said, but turned to go. Can she be late for her cinema show? Cinema show. Scurries up the stair with head held high and floral tie, a weekend millionaire. I will make my bed with her tonight, he cries. Can he fail, armed with his juggling? A man like the sea I raged, once a woman like the earth I gave, but there is in fact more earth than thank you.
Listen to the old one speak of all he has lived through. I have crossed between the poles. To me there's no mystery. Once a man like the sea I raged. Once a woman like the earth I gave. But there is in fact more earth. We'll be right back.
Genesis with Cinema Show, originally on the Genesis album Selling England by the Pound, and now included on the comprehensive three-disc anthology Archive. Genesis co-founder Phil Collins admits that there are millions of Genesis fans who have no idea that Peter Gabriel made 5 studio albums as the lead singer of Genesis.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, some fans, old songs to them are songs from Abacab, you know. And in fact, we have a much longer history. I mean, there's probably only, well, in English band terms anyway. I mean, obviously, you've got people like Grateful Dead and probably bands like that have been around a long time. But really, you've got the Stones and the Who and us. And their old songs are the songs that go back to the late 60s or mid 60s in the case of the Stones and the Who. But it depends on who you talk to. Yeah, I mean, I think older fans of ours tend to sort of to criticise or not enjoy or feel they shouldn't enjoy the shorter songs because those are the songs that have actually been in the charts and they feel like that maybe we've sold out or commercialised what we do to get them there. And in fact, you know, we have had those kind of songs throughout the history of the band. I mean, I Know What I Like was one of the early hits we had in England. But I mean, all the way through the history of the band, there have been short songs, you know, and there have been long songs. So it depends who you talk to, who likes what.
It's 1 o'clock and time for lunch. Bum-da-dum-dee-dum. When the sun beats down and I lie on the bench, I can always hear them talk.
There's always been Ethel. Jacob, wake up, we got a tidy room now. And then Mr. Lewis was at the time that he was out on his own. Over the garden wall, two little lovers, cuckoo to you. Keep them going, they sharp.
Just a lawnmower. You can tell me by the way I walk.
I Know What I Like had enough of a sing-along chorus when it appeared on the Genesis album Selling England by the Pound in 73 that it became a modest hit in the UK. By this time, the very lyrical sustained lead guitar of Steve Hackett was a signature sound, along with Tony Banks' grand keyboards in Genesis, but Mike Rutherford reminded me that his Charterhouse prep school mate Anthony Phillips was the original guitar player in the band. Why did your school chum, Anthony Phillips, why did he leave after the Trespass album?
He had a mixture of things. You got glandular fever, and not very well, which does knock you right down. Then he got stage fright. And I think, you know, his leaving is probably the hardest one of all, actually, to get over, I think. And what's interesting is this documentary we've done with all the old five members, he finally gets quite a good appreciation in it, which is nice. What an important part he was, really, in the early days.
Oh, that's great to hear, because I'll tell you, until I read your book or started here reading your book and stuff like that, I have to be honest, he's kind of like the missing link that I forgot. I always think still of Steve as being your first guitar player.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was only there for the first two albums, but just as you know, a bunch of friends at school, he was, as you get in the book, but you know, he was the most sort of driven, the most together, the most dynamic in the early days. And so I think without him, so it's nice on the documentary program, he gets quite a good appreciation, which I'm pleased about.
I'm looking forward to that. How did you recruit Steve Hackett then?
Well, funny enough, I wasn't there, because basically I think I was trying to find Ant too, you know, the same person as Ant, which you can't find. So when I was ill one time, I was in bed for a couple of weeks, they found Pete and Steve. Pete and Tony found Steve probably without me there, because I wasn't there, that's why they found him. And he was a natural fit straight away, really.
Suzanne tired of work, all done things money.
the first true concept album from Genesis, 1974's The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, was the band's critical and commercial breakthrough. But The Lamb was soon to become a swan song for charismatic lead singer Peter Gabriel. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, 24/7 at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Phil Collins and Mike Rutherford in the studio for Genesis Archive Part 1.
This is Phil Collins.
And this is Tony Banks.
Hi, this is Mike Rutherford from Genesis in the studio with Archive Part 1.
The word among rock music fans after Foxtrot was that you really had to see this band Genesis live in concert to truly get it. Compare and contrast the considerably different animals that making records versus playing theaters and guild halls was in 1973.
It definitely was. I mean, I think in a sense what helped us was our music lent itself towards atmospheric interpretation. You know, the moody passages, the especially Tony's chords and the drama meant that it worked on stage. If you lit it and made it sort of present it in the same way, it made it, it raised the bar, I think, a bit each time. The thing is, you know, it didn't film anything. And so over the years, people, you know, we talk about Peter's bat wings and all the costumes, you know, but it's just words. When you saw it live, it felt slightly less theatrical. It felt strong, but it felt more natural, you know what I mean? But the costumes that were spoken about and pictures, they seemed slightly staged, but in reality, it didn't feel that way when we did put it live.
Well, the photos are completely out of context. Roger Waters told me that after he left Pink Floyd, he was shocked at how anonymous Pink Floyd was, even to its biggest fans. Mm. Likewise.
Well, that was, yeah, in a sense, that was their strength, really, but he didn't, until you start going on your own.
Well,
it's a bit hard.
And that's where I'm going with this. Likewise, Genesis on record was an entity without identifiable personality stars. Was that by design?
Not really. I mean, I think Peter was a strong front man, in a sense, but it's always about the songs and the sound, really, I think, and the name. Now, the one thing, as you know, had Peter run it by us, we'd have always probably said no. So Peter had the brains to realise, actually, don't tell him what I'm doing, just do it. And it worked that way. Otherwise, like, we'd have vetoed most of his things, knowing us.
Wow. Tell me your lasting recollections when somebody says, hey, tell me about that Lamb tour. What was that like? What were the high points?
Well, I remember the first thing is the album was late because we were a bit behind time. So the very first few shows, we played crazy, really, you know, a double album.
That no one had ever heard.
Live. No one ever heard. So considering, it went down pretty well, actually. But it was very adventurous. One thing I didn't realize until we finished it, really, was that playing a whole set from just one era of album was probably not the best, because actually you're stuck, you know, normally when you play a set of variety of songs, you're playing from different eras. This is an entire set by the Encore of one era, but it was quite, we were adventurous.
There is lamb's wool under my naked feet. The wool is soft and warm, gives off some kind of heat. A salamander scurries into flame to be destroyed. Imaginary creatures are trapped in birth on celluloid. The fleas cling to the golden fleece, hoping they'll find peace. Each thought and gesture a card in celluloid. There's no hiding in memory, there's no room to avoid. The crawlers cover the floor in the red ochre corridor. On my second sight of people, they have more lifeblood than before. They're moving in time to a heavy wooden door, where the needle's eye is winking, closing on the poor. The carpet crawlers, he dare call us. We gotta get him to get out. We gotta get him to get out. We gotta get him. Direction in the faces that I see, it's upward to the ceiling,
where the chamber's said to be. Like the forest fight for sunlight that takes root in every tree. They are pulled up by the magnet, leaving their free.
The carpet crawlers, he dare call us. We gotta get in to get out. We gotta get in to get out. We gotta get in to get out.
Mild Man and Superman are held in kryptonite, and the wise and foolish virgins giggle with their bodies glowing bright. Through the door a harvest feast is lit by candlelight. It's the bottom of a staircase, but spies.
Genesis in concert, however, up through Lamb, was another matter completely, with the frontman Peter Gabriel.
How did everyone's
role in Genesis evolve, and was everyone comfortable with that role?
Yeah, well, I mean, as is sort of well documented, you know, towards the end, it was the Lamb was getting a little bit, the visuals were slightly overtaking the public perception. It never really bothered me that much. Phil got a bit bothered because actually, you know, they didn't talk about the music anymore, and him being a drummer, that bothered him, but it's a natural passage.
How did you get the news that Peter Gabriel was leaving Genesis? How surprising of a revelation was it? You know, a penny for your thoughts.
Well, it was obviously a shock, but it wasn't that much of a shock because, you know, he left for a bit during the Lamb. And so you could tell his heart wasn't quite as into it as we were. You could feel he was sort of slightly drawing away. He'd had a young baby. Things were changing a little bit, I think. And so, but when the news still came, we were mid-tour in America, and my manager told me, and your heart kind of sinks because you think, oh, fuck, all this work we've done, it's been going well. And the other thing you sort of feel is that you sort of, there's a sadness. You know that you and Peter will never be quite so close again. You know, we're still friends, but you never share the same thing quite as much as well again.
That's very sweet.
So a sadness,
that's
too.
That's very sweet. So there was a... It was much more to you than a professional career loss.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, frontmen are frontmen sort of thing. That's the way it works. Until they leave, then you go, sh-
I see faces and traces of home. Back in your city.
Again, Genesis co-founder Mike Rutherford. With hindsight, how do you think Genesis' incremental steps through 5 studio albums and the 73 live album affected your subsequent ability to sustain a long, productive career?
Well, I think it was a great start of learning our craft, you know, touring the world, playing new places, building a small cult following to a medium-sized cult following. It's a good apprenticeship, you know, really, I think, and some great music. And then in a funny way, I think, you know, the subsequent changes with Steve leaving and then Peter leaving, in a funny way, although they're not looked for, when they happen, you use it as a sort of new, a kind of revamp, you know, each time.
Hypothetically, if Genesis had scored an international hit like Yes did with Roundabout in 72 or Pink Floyd did with Money in 73, do you think Genesis would have survived Peter Gabriel's abdication after The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway?
Well, I haven't had my first time to ask this question. Possibly not, but then again, we're bloody stubborn. You know, adversity doesn't really spoil us. And what happened with Phil, I think actually was in fact not so much the fact that it worked. I think because he came from the band, the crowd wanted it to work. You really felt the first few shows of that tour, Tree Hill Tale tour, that the audience, because they knew Phil and liked Phil. They were on our side. They wanted it to work. And so I think that's unusual. Normally, you replace someone with a new face from outside. Phil was from in-house. So I think it made a big difference.
Tell me, what else have you all been collaborating on?
We've done this documentary, which is basically called Genesis Together and Apart. Now, the key behind this was that they were on about making The Lamb. And I said, look, there's a better story to be told, which is that, you know, people don't really realize that from this one school band, Genesis, you've got the Gabriel career, the Collins career, the Mechanics career. People often separate it. And you put it all together and you sort of go, you know, you hear a sort of, I don't know, Turn It On Again or a Biko or In The Air or Living Years. And you kind of go, that's an amazing collection of compositions. And when you put it together, it's quite nice to just remind people, actually, that the variety of songwriting we've had over the years. And so the documentary is basically about that, and the 5 of us meet together and talk and chat about it. I think it's got a bit of warmth and a bit of humour in it, too. It's a nice story, and it just tells the story of the whole band.
This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Phil Collins and Mike Rutherford. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2014, all rights reserved, transcription Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook. Find out more at inthestudio.net.